The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by Boyle Sports. Proud supporters of Responsible Gambling Week. Visit responsiblegamblingweek.org for details on who to contact if you or a friend need help or advice.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So here we are, Technical Band, another football show.
Yeah. What's the story then, Joe? You got any news for me? You always have something for me, something along the line.
I've got a few bits and bobs.
Have you?
Yeah.
You're going to hit me with something tonight, something of real importance.
I'm going to hit you with something. Are you working over the weekend?
Saturday, yeah. Only in studio at the BBC.
Final Score.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm going to hit you with some bits that you're going to end up using.
Oh, yeah?
Recycling on the Final Score.
Yeah.
So we'll talk a little bit about a few bits and bobs going on, and we'll also bring you a decent-sized chunk of Keith Andrews speaking to Keith Tracy on The Keith Andrews Show today. A really good chat. Keith Tracy, very open about his mental health. So that is on
good player,
the way.
Good player, Keith. Yeah. Very good player he was, Joe. Probably one of those players as well that, because we haven't necessarily seen a lot of him playing in an Irish jersey or in the top-flight football, but tremendous natural ability, you know, lovely left foot, brilliant left foot, in fact. And it just one of those things where that happens in football and in life, just wasn't necessarily able to fulfil his potential, really.
Yeah, it's sad, really. He talks to Keith today, so we'll bring you that later on in a few moments' time. Things which are grabbing attention. Neil Lennon.
I mean, the other one thing around this game, it's still something that even strikes me now when, of course, we think of the Old Firm, we think of Celtic Rangers, and we think of big derbies over in Britain, I suppose, as well. We think of United, Liverpool, and as much a derby, but certainly a huge game within two cities. But City, United, Liverpool, Everton, Merseyside derby, North London derby. But this Edinburgh derby, over the last couple of years, it's starting to really come to the fore now, I suppose. And people are starting to seriously talk about it. It's something that would have bypassed me to an extent.
Yeah.
But it's starting to get a little bit more aggro at this match now.
So the game finished 0-0, and what happened in the final few moments, I'm sure you've seen it at this stage. So there was a goal scored and then disallowed, and Lennon turned around as if to say to all the crowd, sit down, not a goal, still 0-0 kind of thing. And he was kind of smiling and gesturing at them.
Yeah.
And then Coin comes and whacks him in the jaw, and Lennon hits the deck fairly quickly. My jaw is throbbing. I'm very, very angry. I'm fizzing. It's disgraceful. Fizzing is the ultimate. That's code red.
Yeah, I've seen him fizzing as well.
I'd say so. So I'm fizzing. It's disgraceful. I don't blame the club. You can't legislate for what hatred of some individuals or the badness. What possesses people to throw things on a football pitch, I will never know. He said, I'd like to meet the individual who threw the coin because I'm not happy. What would you say to him, they asked. That's not for public consumption, trust me. I don't know if I would say anything to him. And then the Hearts goalkeeper as well seemed to be struck by a fan when he was trying to get the ball back.
Yeah.
He was being hit with missiles as well, and then a fan sort of half struck him and he hit the deck as well. Lennon was saying, it's blackening the name of both clubs and Scottish football. This should be a showpiece game. It was feisty, intimidating, everything you expect. But if people can't behave themselves, then they should be banned, singled out, embarrassed and humiliated because they have humiliated the club. And I think it was put to Lennon, did you play your part? You know, was it the best thing to do to turn around and gesture to them? And he was having none of that. He said, it was a really lighthearted the whole game. There was no malice, bit of banter between me and a couple of fans. Obviously, there was some heavy stuff as well, but nothing over the top. So where that came from, the coin throwing, I don't know. Their mode of thinking will be, well, Lennon brings it on himself. Sorry, that does not wash, and that's why I'm angry, and it could have been a lot worse. I guess that's the ultimate point.
Yeah, I don't know where you stand on it. It's a strange one, isn't it? You know, when we saw, in the last few weeks, we've seen serious trouble at GAA matches. Of course, we saw the trouble down in Kerry. Was it last week, wasn't it? And there's not a lot said around it, isn't it? These big sporting events, yet this supporter, if he's found, they'd probably get a lifetime ban.
Oh, yeah.
A lifetime ban. Mm. We'll see. I remember Chris Kirkland a few years ago now as well, but I think he was playing for Sheffield Wednesday at the time when the supporter came onto the pitch, basically give him a right hook. Mm. And it's, we're thinking they're quite rightly a lifetime ban. Is a lifetime ban maybe a little harsh for a coin throw? I don't know. Where do you put it? I don't know.
Well, if it takes his eye out, then it's...
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the damage that it could do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some individual that's probably had one too many to drink and decides then that he can throw a coin at someone. Yeah, it probably is right because of the damage that could be done. That's the thing.
See, I agree with him and disagree with him. I agree with him that ultimately it's unacceptable and it shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But when he says, I played no part in this, I kind of disagree. I just don't think it's the best thing to do at that moment.
Yeah, but do you not...
In a perfect world, it's fine.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I'm still saying Neil Lennon is 100% the victim here.
Yeah.
100% the victim here.
Well, I think...
And yet, if you turn to a mob like that... Mob maybe is the wrong word. But at that exact moment, they thought they've won the derby. Mm. It's just been disallowed and he's given it the old, ooh, sit down, sit down, sit down. Is it unbelievable that one idiot reacted? No, it's not.
No, it's not. There's an element of me with you here that will say, yeah, you're probably right in what you're saying. Heat of the moment stuff. Mm. The coach at Chelsea last week running past Mourinho. If I'm Mourinho, I'm getting up and looking to give him a right hook at that stage. And all of a sudden, Mourinho's getting... He's getting a bit of stick, really, for reacting to it. I thought Mourinho did nothing wrong with that. This is a bit different. If you stood on the touchline, I mean, you know, I've played a lot of my time as a winger, as a fullback, or whatever it would be, the amount of stick you'd hear from the touchline coming your way constantly, various things thrown at you, whether that would be my hair, which has been a constant mock, even saying I've got a great hairstyle. What's wrong
with your hair?
It's terrible, as you know.
Your hair always terrible?
It's just flat, isn't it? It's got no life, has it?
No volume.
It's got nothing, has it?
It's not condition it or do anything with it, no?
I try something.
Put a bit of volume in that thing.
I should try and put a bit of gel in it sometimes. I can't do anything with it.
I never thought you had an issue with your hair at all, to be honest.
I don't have an issue with it myself.
I thought it was long and flowing. It suited your style of play running down the wing.
Yeah, well, that's why I've been called many things for it anyway. Some of them, well, most of them aren't too pleasant.
Someone's done a close-up of your hair there. That's just not fair.
Oh, it's shocking, isn't it? It's terrible. It is terrible.
I never knew you had an issue with your hair.
I've not got an issue with it, but it's just me. I can't change it. It's just flat, isn't it?
Well, why don't you do something with it? Does it need to be shorter or longer here?
It needs a cut, yeah. It does need a cut.
Well, what if you grew it out a bit more? Stephen Hunt style.
Hunty, yeah. No, I couldn't carry off a Hunty.
Because it's shorter than...
But Hunty was dyeing his hair from the age of 20. I could never see myself dyeing my hair, to be honest with you, Joel. I wouldn't even be arsed with that. But
it was longer in your playing days.
Yeah, probably. I've had it all different
lengths. Yeah.
The thing is, my hair just does the same thing. Unless I put a little bit of gel in it to try to, or a bit of wax or something in it, it's just.
Why don't you do that then?
I do most of the time. I do, but today I just didn't have the time to.
Show me when it was good.
No, I never said it's good. Okay. I never said it's good when I put wax in, but it just makes it
less
just,
awful.
Lets it stick in the same place. Whereas now it's just all over the guy.
I think it's a bit in between stools for me. It's a bit long at the sides as well, I think. That's what's killing you. Look, it's a bit... Oh, I don't like saying this. It's a bit like a bowl over the head that your mum's done.
that's what's normally said to me, actually, yeah. That is what...
It does have that feel. It's a DIY job.
I have cut my hair in the past myself. I've cut my own hair.
Ah, for God's sake.
Honestly, I have.
As a Premier League footballer.
Who cares? Who really cares, Joel?
Well, if I was playing on the wing and had people commenting on my hair all the time...
It wasn't all the time. It was on occasion.
Every game, non-stop.
On occasions, the throwaway comment to me was my hair. Yeah.
Then I would probably just go and pay the tenner.
Where are we going to from this? We're talking about Neil Lennon being struck by a coin. I've brought up that I've had a bit of stick sometimes from my hair, and we've gone on a 5-minute rant over it. You know.
It's just.
Are we putting this in the same ballpark? Neil Lennon getting struck by a coin.
No, we're not. We're not. We're not. Neil Lennon didn't deserve it. You did. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, that's probably true. That is very true. I'd probably go with you on that. I wouldn't disagree with that.
Can we get some suggestions in for what you might do with your hair, and then we might just experiment and try and find
what I might do with my hair.
Yeah. See what people think. We might find a solution.
Yeah.
It's just a bit too long to be short, but it's not long enough to be long.
Right,
like, it's just really in between stools there.
Right, I'm going to have to get it cut this
weekend. Doesn't know what it's trying to do.
I'm going to have to get it cut then, Anna, this weekend. I haven't got the time to get it cut this weekend as well, so tomorrow I'll be able to get it cut, actually, yeah.
There you go.
So I'll be able to get it cut tomorrow.
Yeah,
just have a trim up.
And do you find it looks worse in real life or on TV?
Oh, let's not talk about
that. I just one last question
on
it.
Sometimes, or a majority of the time, I do look at myself on TV and I think, oh,
just needs a tightening.
Joe, I can't do anything. When it grows, it's just terrible. That's the thing.
I would just get it trimmed a bit.
I mean, that was me at 20. It's not changed.
See, listeners, we've just put up a picture of him in his West Brom kit at 20, and it's much better.
It's the same.
No, it's longer.
Is it?
Yeah. See, I just think at the moment it's scruffy looking, whereas in that picture, It's a bit more knowing what it is. It's deliberately like, that's just someone who hasn't had a haircut in 6 weeks. Whereas the other one is you going, well, my hair is long.
Right.
That's the key difference. I'm ready to move on if you want to.
Yeah.
Do you want to have a final thoughts on your hair?
No, I don't. Final thoughts on Neil Lennon?
I mean, it's a pity. I mean, it's going to happen. I don't. Well, if it becomes a trend, we can talk about it again.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, the only thing I'm saying with Neil Lennon there is, if he's getting stick and a little bit, I personally think he's quite entitled to turn around and just, lads, give him a bit of stick, calm down.
In a perfect world, yeah.
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 I think we scrutinise every manager for something that's done in the heat of the moment, when in those moments at times, whether it's a player on the pitch or a player or a manager or a coach that's off it, you lose your head and and you look back and you think, why the hell have I done that?
No, I can totally appreciate that. You definitely don't deserve a coin in the face for doing that. So we'll get to Arsenal-Liverpool, which is this weekend's biggest game, I think, 5:30 on Saturday at the Emirates. But Wayne Rooney has been given various interviews. So, I mean, Rooney to DC United has been a huge success. I hadn't fully appreciated just what a success he has been.
Mm.
They were going nowhere, and he has basically prompted one of the great mid-season turnarounds in MLS history. So the team have gone from being the dregs of the MLS to now clinching a playoff spot in the final week of the season. So in 19 appearances, because I think everyone's familiar with the Rooney chase back and tackle and the assist.
That against Orlando, wasn't it? It was brilliant, wasn't it? Amazing.
Who knows who it was against?
Against Orlando, Joe, it was. Okay. I remember, because it stuck to my mind, because it was the Orlando were up towards the back end of that match. It stuck in my mind, yeah.
Yeah. Who could forget Orlando?
Well, because, do you know why that is stuck in my mind? It's the truth. James O'Connor, who used to play for Ireland under 21s at Stoke and Irish underage international, he's the manager of Orlando. That's why it's in my head. Yeah.
Oh, we should get him on. Yeah. Didn't realise that. So, 19 appearances for Wayne Rooney, 12 goals and 9 assists in 19 games.
It's a great return, isn't it, from him, really?
Fantastic. 33 years old. So he's done an interview talking about various bits and bobs. I knew it was a tough league, a physical league, but I think the ability of teams in the league and the ability of individual players is a lot higher than I thought it was going to be. And he's talking about being able to go out and get a coffee.
Mm.
And just what a nice thing that is from him.
Yeah.
I guess he's had pretty much over half his life. 16,
ever since I've known him.
Yeah, it's over half his life.
Yeah.
16 was when he scored against Arsenal. So now he's 33. So for over half his life. He's just talking about the spontaneity that life gives him now. So before, you'd have to really plan things out, maybe phone ahead, organise things.
Going with the kids to the park, anything like that.
He was saying, we can now decide at the spur of the moment, let's go get a coffee and go for a walk.
Yeah.
And he's saying, it's lovely. It must be.
I know. I said, when I joined Everton, Wayne was 17, 16?
16.
He was 16, I think, when I joined Everton.
Oh, when you joined, sorry.
Yeah, when I joined. So, 16, 17 anyway. And when I joined, he was the name on everybody's lips. He was the only player. You would have thought, and he probably was to an extent, the only player that we had at the club. Certainly the marquee player then, even at such a young age. Everybody knew about him. I knew about him from probably when he was about 12 or 13. I was hearing about him up at Sunderland and at West Brom whenever I was. So he was certainly a player that's been on everyone's mind within the game, certainly initially, and then certainly around the game from such a young age. So, yeah, he's had so much scrutiny in his life. I can imagine for him, I had a chance to go to San Jose towards the back end of my career. It never happened, one reason or another, but to play out the... For him, for me, it would be totally different. For him, I think he's needed to go out there just to get away from things, to be able to live his life, essentially.
Yeah.
Live his adult life. He's not been able to live his adult life, and I think he'll see a different person in himself probably in the next year or two.
Or if he does, and he's made a few mistakes, then it's everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't it a year ago that thing blew up and he was in the papers again? Yeah. It was just a mess. So I'd say he's delighted to get out of there. He's the captain. He's the DJ as well. I put on the music. It's all a bit of James Bay, Ed Sheeran and Mumford & Sons.
Yeah, his musical taste was always really poor, I have to say that.
Because he had a Stereophonics tattoo.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was coming through Stereophonics...
Education, what was the one?
Jeep.
No.
Just Enough Education.
Just Enough Education to Perform. That was
their
it,
albums.
Yeah. The albums, yeah.
The one after Something in Cocktails. What was their big album?
Yeah, good album, actually.
Performance and Cocktails?
Mm.
I think it was Performance and Cocktails.
Was it? Yeah. Good knowledge, Joe.
And then they followed that up with Jeep, which was a poor album. But he got that tattoo, Just Enough Education to Perform, which was a shocking decision. Like, I knew the kid was going to make mistakes when I saw that. That's when I knew this won't run smoothly.
Was he at Man United at the time then? Did he sign for United?
Yeah,
Probably had.
Yeah, no, he's around then. But I just thought, you know, he's going to fall into some traps.
Yeah.
Including Just Enough Education to Perform tattooed on his arse or whatever it is. I don't know. So, I'll tell you what, though, I did like. He was doing an interview with Men in Blazers, the TV show over there, and he was talking about when he first signed with DC United, and he said as part of the deal they were going to offer him first-class flights and first-class travel and private hotel rooms for away room for away games. Obviously, the other players aren't getting that, and he said, no, I'm not doing any of that. So he travels whatever way the team are travelling, on a bus sometimes or back at the plane, he's there and is sharing a room. He says, it's not rocket science. If you go somewhere and form relationships with the players and speak to them, things will be better. I know a lot of players who come over here, big players in other countries, they haven't attempted to form those relationships or buy into what the team are doing. I think it's very important. You do that and you can have a big impact on the team. So it's great. He's gone there for the right reasons, really, and doing it the right way. And 19 appearances, 12 goals, 9 assists, and he's dragged them into the playoffs. It's very impressive,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, it is great. As long as I've known him as well, he was always that player that he loved the social side of being a footballer. I'm not talking away from the game, the social dressing room.
Yeah.
On the bus going to and from games. And I think back into my career, even though sometimes we had some horrendous journeys going to games, stuck on motorways and things like this, it was such a buzz.
You probably look back on them fondly.
Oh, it's such a buzz. And that was where Wayne came into his own. He was, even as a kid, a typical Scouser. You know, he was a lad that wanted to be part of everything. Great, great kid, great laugh. And that's the thing that sticks in your mind with him, really. That's the thing that sticks in my mind. And his lifestyle has had to change as he's got older, as he's had kids, and he's had to shy away from, certainly from public life in a way.
Yeah.
But the way that he was, I'm certain in myself now that he wouldn't have changed his mindset to life and to training in general.
Still only 33.
Yeah.
Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely a bit old before his time.
Yeah. I just think his physique at such a young age, he was a man at 15, Joel, 16, wasn't he? So
he was always going to have a shorter shelf life, I think, than the Giggs, who had no weight in him.
Yeah, that's it.
It's interesting what he was saying about England as well, watching them during the World Cup. So I thought he was going to say something like, it was a bit tough to watch them. Because he starts by saying, the last time I watched England and wasn't part of it all was when I was 16 or 17.
Yeah.
So I thought he was going to say, it's pretty difficult. I was sat on my couch a million miles away and this was all happening. And instead he said, it was great to just chill out and watch the games.
Yeah.
Like the pressure. I guess he's had that for such a long time. So I didn't get the sense he missed the England pressure and the England hype necessarily. Because he's had pretty unenjoyable tournaments.
Yeah. It is amazing that really. I do have total empathy with him on that one. It's you live your whole life wanting to be a professional footballer, and you dream of those big nights playing for your country and playing in World Cups, all these sort of things. And sometimes it's nice just to step back from it.
Really,
and just think it is. You miss it. Well, I certainly would miss it now when I'm going to games. But for Wayne, the scrutiny that's been on him from such a young age, particularly internationally, the hopes of England as a nation in every tournament has fairly much rested on his shoulders,
true,
hasn't it?
And the worst thing he did was blow everyone out of the water at Euro 2004, and they thought, well, do that again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be very difficult.
I know, it is.
So that's Rooney. I think the MLS postseason starts next week. Arsenal-Liverpool, Emirates, Saturday, 5:30. Liverpool 8 wins this season. Arsenal 7 wins this season. We've got our Arsenal back and all that business. Paul Merson, Kev, was asked about Arsenal, the new Arsenal.
Yeah.
And he is not impressed. He says, Arsenal's defending hasn't changed one bit since Arsene Wenger left. And he does not think Arsenal will get a Champions League place. He's not impressed. He's not buying into the hype at all. My big stat for you on the defending point, because I thought, well, is Merson just basing this on what he's seeing? Or is he looking at the stats? Or what's he thinking? So Arsenal, in their 10 Premier League games thus far, have shipped 141 shots in 10 games. So only Burnley, Brighton, Fulham, Newcastle and West Ham have faced more.
Yeah.
So if you take Arsenal's 141 shots in a game, or across the 10 games, compared to just 80 for Liverpool, Manchester City just 59 shots, and Arsenal are at 141.
Yeah.
So Merson sense that actually the defending is still a bit away from being perfect is maybe quite right. And if you're giving up, 141 shots, 10 Premier League games, 14 on average, you've got to think Liverpool will create at least 16 to 18 shots there. You can't really give up 16 to 18 shots to Liverpool.
Yeah. I'm thinking exactly the same thing.
And you can use that on final score.
Can I?
No problem.
Can I use that?
Yeah.
Can I quote you?
Don't quote me personally.
Yeah. But I heard you talking about the other day, you know, City and Chelsea losing those first two games of the season, and then whenever you've seen them on this run that they've been on, of course, drawing against Palace last weekend, but watching the Leicester game in particular, was that last week Monday?
Yeah.
Ago, and
the goal down and came back.
The amount of chances that they were conceding in that first half, and they should have had a penalty, Leicester as well. Mm. Slack defending. Most of the chances that they're conceding, it's not necessarily from poor defending, it's actually from poor attacking play, if you know what I mean, giving the ball away, because they're trying to build from the back, so they're trying to actually look for thready passes from a real defensive area, so it might be one of the centre halves is on the ball, and they're trying to thread a ball through to a central area. It's a bit tight, you know, making a risky pass. And sides like Leicester thrive. That's Leicester's game all day long, isn't it? So that's where the chances seem to be coming from when I've been watching them. But up front, when they had it off in the last 25, 30 minutes of that game against Leicester, it's as good a football as you're ever likely to see.
Yeah,
you
can't,
you're just watching it, you're just mesmerised, thinking, why can't it be like this the whole time? Mm. So it might be building towards a future of them being a bit more stable defensively, which I don't necessarily see with who they've got in the Xhaka playing at left back. Xhaka playing left back. I mean, you can see it in your head.
Yeah.
The amount of fouls he concedes.
Too rash.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Given the penalty away last week, and he's not a defender. So that's probably a way for him to get Xhaka in the side. That's the way that I would see it for Unai Emery. But I think in general, they aren't a side that would fill me with confidence defensively at all, no. So I'm not necessarily on the same wavelength as Merson, but I'm somewhere near it. I'm not necessarily with him.
You're not convinced yet.
No, I'm not convinced. Yeah. I'm not convinced that they are going to be consistently playing the way that they're playing now and finishing the top four.
This is their toughest game in some time. It's at the Emirates, so it'll be really interesting.
I think it suits them. I think it suits Liverpool being at the Emirates.
Do you hit them?
That's the way that I think about it. I think Liverpool win this.
Okay, that's at 5:30 on Saturday. So we're taking a short break, and next up we're going to bring you Keith Andrews having a really brilliant conversation with former Preston and Burnley and Irish player Keith Tracy. That's on the way next.
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Now, welcome back. So, as you know, at this stage, the Keith Andrews Football Show is podcasted and streamed live every Thursday, 12:30. And today he had a brilliant chat with Keith Tracy, former Preston, Burnley, Irish player. Keith has had real mental health difficulties and was very honest with Keith Andrews this afternoon. Here's how they got on.
Conor Clifford's done a good article recently in an interview, and he was speaking about the pressure of having to have the Louis Vuitton wash bag, having to have, and I remember even going back to my time, the certain type of runner, the certain type of trainer, there was that little bit of pressure. Was that something that was evident at Blackburn?
It was evident, yeah. It passed me over. I'm sure you remember. I was getting called a pike and all sorts, but I lived in the digs, so I only ever come down in a pair of shorts, you know, ready to go into my training gear. So I sort of avoided all that stuff, but it was evident. I knew there's probably players before you came to Blackburn, like Jamal Johnson, and there was people like that that just, they go out and bike. Like, I bought a Range Rover at 17. I didn't even have a driver's licence or anything like it. And it's just them things, you're trying to be like the people around you, and yeah, you get like too much too quick.
You were 18. I went to Blackburn in August 2008. So you would have been 18 then, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
18, maybe 17.
Going on 18. I'm not going to pretend I can walk out these
next
numbers.
Next year. So, we're born on the same day, remember?
Are you 13?
Different year. 13 September, yeah.
All right. Yeah, so.
Do you remember that? And Carl Robinson was as well. Remember at the time when he was at Blackburn as the coach?
No, we'd never have tweaked that at all, no.
But you're obviously a few years different, you're a bit younger. Yeah. So when I moved there, I was really aware of you as this young Irish lad coming through, and you made the comparison of, or sorry, a lot of people were making the comparison of the new Damien Duff. So moved there, and in my first game, we were playing at Upton Park, and I don't know whether you remember this, got brought on at half-time, Vince Scarella, who, to be fair to Vinny, I think struggled with the tempo of the game and came off at half time. I've never seen anybody have so much cramp at half time in a game. His legs could not move at half time. He was on the floor.
Well, I bet his hair still looked great, didn't it?
Yeah, looked $1 million. But then you came on in that game as well. I came on at half time and then bang. So you're in and around it straight from the off. Playing, and then that was obviously Paul Ince was the manager. I think he showed a lot of belief in you, but things were flying.
Yeah.
Weren't they?
Things were flying there, but like when you came in, you obviously only seen me getting into the team, but under Mark Hughes, I was in every squad, travelling everywhere, and you know, would never get to the pitch. It was everything but getting onto the pitch. Yeah. And when Ince came in, did you play in that game against Everton? Remember the first game of the season?
No, I saw it the day after.
Yeah, that was
4-1, wasn't it?
I think we were losing 1-0.
Away to Everton, wasn't it?
The first game of the season, and I was sitting there and somebody turned around and said, Keith's going to warm up. And I was like, he's not bringing me on. We're losing, like, in Goodison Park. He ain't bringing me on. And he turned and said, Keith, come on. I was like, he's making a mistake here. I was absolutely panicking.
Did you think that really?
I was panicking because the crowd is so close. We're I thought if I win in 3-0, there's a chance he'll bring me on and, blood me a bit. But this was, I suppose, he showed a lot of faith in me there. And I think we ended up winning. So that was a great confidence booster for me. And I remember that West Ham game as well.
Do you?
Bellers was playing, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he was having a go at Lucas Neal about getting tight to me.
Yeah.
He was calling me all sorts of names while he was telling him to get tight. But yeah, that was the type of fella Bellers was as well.
So you've talked about the Range Rover, and I remember that. So I remember coming to the club and hearing loads about you, seeing it then with my own eyes, seeing how good you were, how good you could be. And then I'm looking at you some mornings and I'm thinking, you were out last night, or you were out two nights on the bounce. And then, oh my, I'm 28 at the time, then going on 28. And look, I've been there. Look, see it. And so there's a fine line between looking at you and thinking, I don't want to be a dad here. I don't want to be like on you all the time. But then it's a fine line between that and then trying to give you some kind of guidance, some kind of advice. Yeah. And it's difficult because you've got all this potential. And I know there was a lot of the senior players trying to kind of curb you and the Range Rover story. Like, what was the Range Rover story about the lads off the bus? So you get back from an away game. You'll have to fill in the blanks here because I've heard this second, third hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Graeme Souness was the manager. It was Mark Hughes was the manager. So Mark Hughes is the manager. Mm. And at the end of the game, you get back to the stadium or the training ground, and the usual story is the staff and the young players get the stuff off the bus, the kit, the skips, all the rest of it. And as Mark Hughes looks around, you're whizzing past in your Range Rover.
I honestly don't remember. It sounds like something I'd have done, but not. I wouldn't have done it on purpose. I wouldn't have done, I'm too good for this. I probably played and thought, I don't have to do it today because I played. Yeah. It would have been something like that, but obviously I had that bit of arrogance about me and people probably rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way at the time. But
I think it was more frustration. I don't think it was arrogance. I think it was frustration. I think everybody was probably in the same boat as me, staff members, and not just coaching staff. Like, the medical staff at Blackburn was quite tight around that time, and they try and chip in and try and give you that little bit of advice. I think the main thing was frustration, because everybody could see how much quality, how much potential that you had, and it was just a case of just curbing that. So, like, Saturday nights, what would be the drill after the game? Was it literally full blast?
Well, Blackburn wasn't really the problem for the drinking. The drinking kicked in Preston although it was the championship, that was when I really started to kick on. I was a big fish at Preston. That was when the drinking started. Blackburn was, people expected me to do things, and I'd always do just enough of what they'd be like you say, you seeing a flash of it, and you're like, oh gee, he is as good as people say, but I would never deliver it when I should. And
why do you think that was? When you look back, when I early stages of my career, I had really frustrating times, and drinking culture was massive in football. And it wasn't a case of just me; it was everybody. So it was one of those. But like, when I look back, and in the years that have gone past, like, I do look in the mirror, I do look towards managers, I do look towards senior players. Could they have helped me a little bit more? Where do you stand on it?
I'd be cockeyed if I was trying to look at people for whose problem it was, but mostly I'd look at myself. But there's certain things, like Phil Brown, when he was manager at Preston, he didn't help. But the earliest memory I have of Blackburn is meeting Dominic Matteo and Gary Flickroft.
Yeah.
Silly bleeding hamstring injury, but I was in the gym and I ended up with them two. And there, Flicky was the captain at the time. And he said to me, never miss a night out. Never, ever miss a night out, because before you know it, your career will be over. And I took him literally on that. Obviously, I shouldn't have, but at 15, you know,
did he mean like team bonding? Is that what he meant?
I'm not sure, but I never missed any night out. Whether it was drinking, go karting, whatever it was, I was there. And it just sort of struck me, and I couldn't deal with the ups and downs of the game. So drinking was always an escape for me. And I was always young enough and fit enough to be able to have a couple of points and get away with it, But it starts, you know, you're burning the candle at both ends. It eventually will come to get you. And
So what happened that press? No, when did it? What, you're saying that wasn't really the time. When did it start escalating? And what happened? Was it just became a constant?
Yeah, it became a constant because I was living in between Preston and Blackpool in a place called Lytham. So if I go to Preston, I can drink till, you know, 1:30, 2:00 in a studenty place. If I go to Blackpool, I can stay up till whatever the next day if I want. So it was never really, oh, it's a Tuesday night, I can't go out tonight. I would always go out knowing I have a recovery day the next day, but I'd be stinking a drink the next day with the booze. And yeah, Phil Brown used to, I was getting injections before every game. I wasn't training. I never ever trained at 21. I wouldn't be, but again, I seen that with, remember Rocky used to do it. He used to not train. He used to be Man Friday. He'd come out and train on Friday, scored on a Saturday. Yeah. And they were the type of people I was looking up to. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. I just won't train and I'll play and turn it on and turn
obviously
it off.
Obviously, that was a different end of the spectrum. He's whatever he was. Yeah, but late 20s, you're 21. So, like, what were you getting injections for?
I had a double hernia that they didn't want to operate on because we were in a dogfight at the relegation end. Yeah. So, he was just getting injections. And it got to the point where my arse had so many needle points in it that they had to start giving me suppositories then.
Seriously?
Yeah, it was Saturday, Tuesday. And my arse was like a dartboard at one stage. It was a joke. But that was it. I wasn't big and man enough to say, listen, I'm not playing today. Because
you'd be
players don't do that.
There's got to be a duty of care as well when it comes to the medical side. And I don't know what you felt. I felt that Blackburn as well. That was probably one of the strongest medical departments in terms of they would stand up for the players' rights.
I think Dave Fever had a lot to do with that. I think he knew what he was doing. He was really, he used to ring me mad at home and all. He had that little personal touch, you know. Not an injury, you know, if I was ill and I was in up in the digs, he would ring me mother and say, listen, it's only a touch of a cold, don't worry about it. Yeah, Blackburn had that little personal touch that was attracted me to him.
Speaking of your mum and your family, when this was going on at Preston in particular, when it was like you're going out Saturdays or kicking on or midweeks, and all, did they have any idea?
I think they knew I was out, but what else was I going to do? They didn't want me sitting in the house getting depressed, so them saying, oh, he's out having a drink, they probably thought, oh, well, everybody's out having a drink, but, you know, they never had a footballer as a son before, so they didn't know which way to guide me. And I was telling them everything was all right, and they'd see me on the telly once a month playing half decent or getting an Ireland cap, and they'd be like, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And you, half the time I'd lie to myself in the mirror saying everything's fine, you know. How can things be wrong if I'm playing for Ireland and playing for Preston week in, week out?
Yeah.
And
I would have been in the same boat. I would have been similar to that in the way that you just try to make it sound like it's so, and they see you every now and again, they speak to you on the phone, and they don't really know the full extent of exactly what you're going through. Like, I wanted to knock football in the head when I was 22, 23, I'd say.
Yeah.
I nearly went to America, nearly went on a scholarship to New York and go and play over there because I'd had enough of it.
Yeah.
I'd had enough of the culture, I'd had enough of the way I was getting treated by Wolves at the time.
Yeah.
And I've said to you as well, like, it just wasn't right for me. Just totally fell out of love with football. Didn't even want to train. It was a horrible position to be in. Did you ever get to that level?
Many, many times. Like, even when things were going well and I scored a goal, I'd wake up the next morning and go, I can't be bothered doing this. And I'm sure for people who've never played the game professionally must listen to that and go, how can you feel like that? But it's the ups and downs of it. Honestly, you can't, I'm sure you understand it, but people just don't understand how hard it is to do that. And, you know, imagine stacking a shelf in Tesco and somebody standing behind you saying, you know, with the awards that you use to us, it's not just, you know, the normal effing and jeffing. Most of it gets personal, you know. Anything that's in the media that's personal will be brought up in a crowd. And, you know, it's not really nice. And
when did the depression kick in? Like, I know you've spoke about that in the last couple of years, but and at the time you didn't, you were saying you've had it for years on and off. And when you look back now, when do you think it started or what started it?
In the nicest possible way, what started it was probably meeting my wife, my wife-to-be at the time. And I was floating through life in England, you know. I was just playing games. Eventually, things weren't going well for me at Barnsley, and I didn't have the bite between my teeth to get myself going again. I couldn't kickstart myself, and my wife and the kids were at home. I was like, this just isn't weighing up here for me. The cons were outweighing the pros all of a sudden, and we were playing Preston at home in Deepdale, so I was allowed to stay at home on Christmas Day. And I woke up Boxing Day, and there was blood all over the sitting room floor, like, and the taxi driver who was coming to get me to bring me to the game was like, he wanted to ring me man, that was like blood. And I got up and got dressed, got cleaned myself up and went to do the warm up. And he put me on the bench, thank God. I thought I was actually due to play. As I turned, we were doing little sprints, and as I turned to sprint, the stadium just started to turn black and black. I couldn't see. And I made some excuse that I had a flu or something and went in, and he told me to sit behind the bench. And I rang my wife, like, on the sly behind the bench, and that was it. We went home that day. I didn't even tell the club. They actually sent me letters 6 months later saying, you've been sacked and blah, blah, but this was 6 months ago. And that's the life of a footballer. It's up and down and up and down.
Didn't help you at all, though, to try and deal with that? Because there's a lot made as well about the PFA. Now, I don't want to be too critical of them, but I think they're very reactive. They're not proactive.
Yeah. Yeah,
so if something comes out, they'll jump on that.
Yeah.
Did they do anything to try and help?
It was somebody from the PFA. Clark Carlisle tried to help me a lot, but it wasn't in the PFA capacity, if you know what I mean. It was as a mate, because I played with him at Burnley, and he was coming over to Preston at the time. And I see myself and Clarkie a lot now. So the only person I would listen to was Clarkie, and he had a great way about him. He was really such a nice fella, and the way he spoke to me really opened my eyes. But there was still a little blip after Clarkie that I had to get over. And I think you really have to hit that rock bottom, and you have to either say, am I going to get straight and keep going, or am I just going to try and live my life? And I remember, did you ever play with Wayne Henderson?
Yes.
I remember he came into my house in Lytham crying one day after a Preston game. He was on the bench, and he just slammed a whiskey bottle down, and he's like, I don't think I'll be able to pick my kids up when they're born. He hasn't got any kids, but because his back was so bad, he starts sobbing. And I was like, this is a grown man crying. Like, picking your kids up is more important than playing a game of football to me, and it always will be. So when I seen Hendo doing that, I was thinking and thinking, if I keep drinking and keep playing here, and I couldn't stop the drinking at the time, so I kept drinking and playing. But eventually I got to a good enough place where, you know, I haven't drank since November now, so...
So you're nearly a year off.
Nearly a year off, yeah. Christmas is coming up, so who knows? Now, this is 3 years of therapy later, you know, to get all this stuff out. And like I say, I like talking about it now, because I think it's a lot of people need to hear this. Yeah, well, did you know any about this stuff when you went over?
No,
it's all rose, and you're going to be a
professional footballer. First and foremost, it's got to help you. Like, it's got to be beneficial for you. And I think, like, I read that article a few weeks ago in the Herald, and I felt so bad. I felt so bad that I should have done more. I could have done more to try and help you when I was at Blackburn, but then don't realise to the extent, and then you go off and you're playing at Burnley, you're playing at Preston, and obviously I'm not seeing you on a daily basis. Then,
well, although I was a child, I wasn't nobody. It's nobody's duty to mind me there when we're on the football pitch. But that was it. What did we train from 10:30 till 12:30, and I'd be back in my house at 12:30, and you know, I'm $2,500 a week sitting in the house. What are you going to do at 17, 18? There's only one thing on my mind. And unfortunately, it was on my mind till I was a lot older to reverse what I'd done to my body.
What's the plan now? So is it a constant battle to try and stay on top of this with the people you have around now, good people? You just mentioned your wife. You just had a baby as well.
It's not a battle anymore. At the start, it was a battle, but at the start, I didn't realise I was trying to give up drink. I thought I was just, I'll give it 2 weeks if I can. And, you know, you start to stretch it and stretch it and stretch it. And before I knew it, I'm sitting here, I'm nearly a year off, and I have no ambition to go back to it at all.
No ambition to go back to drink. What about football?
If you're
not playing at the moment, eh?
Not playing at the moment, but...
If you put that in a box, like you were saying, and you're kind of saying, that's just not important. Not important anywhere near as much as the family side of things and what you want to do.
Yeah, well, like I say, we only had a little boy 2 weeks ago, so given football another thought, I would love to play, but I'd love to play for Sherry Street or East Wall, just an amateur thing, and
to enjoy,
just have a bit of laugh again, and not you know, people going, "Oh, your touch was poor there, or you should have pressed there." It's just forget the tactics and have a game of football.
Can you remember the last time you played football and you enjoyed it?
I don't think I ever enjoyed a professional game of football. It's more
even Ireland.
Even Ireland was. It was more nerve-wracking to think what could go wrong rather than what could I actually go and achieve here. It was, right, just keep it steady, just don't do anything stupid here, Keith. And that's always what I wanted to do, was just, right, don't do anything stupid rather than actually going and
kicking
on.
Whereas your game is the total opposite of that. You had the attributes to be the game-changer. You were the duff, you know, like with those type of qualities. So, like, to imagine that you were even thinking that kind of the game, because if I was with you and you were playing regularly, I'd be, like, literally wanting to get you the ball to win us games, but you're thinking don't do anything wrong.
Well, I think a lot of that could have been to do with Trapp as well. He was that way minded, especially with his wingers. He didn't want to leave the defensive side to expose. But yeah, I was always like that. It was always, and I know when I come on against Argentina, I done okay. I went past Zabaleta a few times, but people made a big thing about that. Like, oh, you just skinned Zabaleta. At the time, he was an aging man, and I was coming into my prime. And well, my prime, what was it, 21 or something? But yeah, it did turn out to be my prime, didn't it? Yeah, but I don't think I enjoyed it. I actually the first thing I did after that game was go down and give my granddad my jersey, because it was his birthday and he was down in Ringsend. So I walked from the Aviva to, just like I did today, back down to my granddad and gave him the jersey. And it was more, I was really proud to be able to give him my jersey rather than like enjoying the game of football itself. It was. Did you enjoy football games?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah?
You seem surprised. I did, and
you
definitely enjoyed it.
You were always a very angry man on the pitch, you were.
Yeah, that's the way I played. That's the way I played. I was really highly strung, and I was really, you'd probably testify to this, a few of the other lads have said, I was always moaning and shouting and screaming. And
yeah.
But I loved that battle side of it. Whereas I had different qualities to you. So I felt like that side of my game would get the best out of you if I got you at it and was giving you the ball and scrapping in midfield and doing certain things. Depends on what club I was at. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. And with Ireland, it was just loved every second of it.
Yeah, well, don't get me wrong. I was extremely proud and all that stuff. I was delighted to do it. But did I actually enjoy the game? Not particularly, no.
So when you look back now, where would you change it? What point do you think then I should have changed it? So again, like, certain parallels. I spoke to you about, I was willing to give up football, didn't like it. I had to get out of Wolverhampton. I went to Hull, hated Hull. I felt like I was living in Russia. It was like the far end of the bleeding earth. It was ridiculous. So it wasn't until I went to MK Dons that I actually fell back in love with football again. You were speaking about, I just want to go and enjoy football. That's where I started to enjoy football again. And it was from then. Whereas, could have easily, you know, if that didn't go well, just fall out. And what was I then? I was 25, maybe?
Well, I think that happened to me at Preston to a certain extent. But even when I left Blackburn, do you remember when I crashed my car?
Mm.
You were training that day, right? And Sam Allardyce wouldn't even speak to me. He sent me in and Dr. Batty had to break me the news. Get out and blah, blah. But some of the things that went on, like behind the scenes, young Irish 15-year-old will never know these things. And how do you speak? There's nobody there. Like, remember our own hands used to do it, but there's nobody there. And I think there is a real
need for that.
There is a need for somebody to speak to them and just
to advise.
Say, listen, if you're not the next Damien Duff, don't worry about it. Right? Like, there's somebody going into your ma and dad at 13 saying, this fella's going to be the next Damien Duff, there's going to be millions. Like, I remember my ma looking at houses out in Bray, and like, that's the sort of pressure that's getting thrown on you. Like, inadvertently now, like, they weren't doing it on purpose, but these little things are just on your back, and you're like, I'm trying to just have a game of football here, and it goes out of it. The fun goes out of it with the professionalism.
Listen, we could go on talking about this forever. I'm glad you're looking well. I'm glad things are going well in terms of being off the drink. Stay strong, all right?
Yeah, of course.
It's been a pleasure.
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Got everything in front of me, so I think I have it. It took me a while to get there.
Okay.
A few of the lads in there earlier on, but I think I've got it. Yeah. The league split up into four different leagues: League A, B, C, and D. If you win a group, you automatically get into a playoff for Euro 2020 by winning a group.
What?
Yeah. So if you win your group, so if we had, say, Wales and Northern Ireland, we then, I think it comes down to, so if you win, if we win League B,
yeah,
and now not from, not necessarily, if you say you win all the games, potentially that gives you the chance, you've topped that group. That's how it would work.
So basically the top four teams in each league, so the one from each group, will go forward to the playoffs, assuming they haven't qualified for Euro 2020 via their actual qualifying group.
But regardless of anything, Joe,
not like you can break water
at the end of it. If you top your league, you go into that. You'll hit then the playoff system. The overall, to go to win the overall winner, which will be League A, B, C, and D.
Yeah.
If then, as I said before, if you win that league, you automatically then qualify. Hit the playoff for the Euros. That's what you get.
When you say winning the league, what do you mean?
You win the League B.
You get one from Pot 1, one from Pot 3, and it's a three-team group. And you play them each home and away, and you got four games. And then if we win our league, we get promoted to League A.
I don't understand. If we win our little group with the other two teams, let's say it's not...
No, not necessarily that. If you win your league.
Yeah, I was going to say, so if we win our league, say we've Northern Ireland and Wales, and we come out of that group.
Say you win all four games. That's the way that you could maybe explain it a little bit. But if you win all four games, you give yourself a great chance of winning the league, because it's going to come down to goal difference and everything will probably...
So what do you have to do to win your league? I get we have a little group within a league. What do you have to do to win the league, to win League B? You don't know. No, that's fine. You don't know.
Yeah, you killed me there. No, let's not go into that.
No, you screwed up.
Welcome back. So that is pretty much us done for this evening. Keith Tracy there, brilliant with Keith Andrews. You were just saying at the top of the football show, for people who maybe weren't listening at that stage, a really, really good player as well.
Yeah,
and real talent. Yeah.
Excellent footballer. Natural. That's the one that you say you've probably heard that. It's who's natural, I don't know. Sure. But great left foot. Mm. I mean, such a good, clean striker of the ball. Probably brings me back to our boots debate we had in the night. He was the sort of player that you would consider an Adidas player. Honestly, Joe.
Thank you.
Just a beautiful, I don't necessarily agree with that, but he was, Joe. He had natural ability to shift the ball onto his left foot. You even think of it in my head now, we used to do in training, the little drills that you would do, shift it onto his left foot half a yard. Tremendous technique. I mean, seriously, seriously good technically.
Yeah.
And it's just, again, it's the way things out with, sorry, way it works out for different players along the way. And it's, but he's a talent, and he was a talent. He's in, you know, I think for even for the level that he got to, sometimes we look back and across the course of all our careers, and you start to think about what if in everything.
Of course, yeah.
But he can actually be proud, I think, in general of what he achieved in his career.
Yeah, for sure. You can catch the full interview on podcast as well, or just watch it back on Facebook with the two Keiths this afternoon. So that's pretty much us done for this evening. Tom Dunn is on the way. OTBAM back tomorrow morning with Adrian Barry, 7:45 on all our social channels. And then tomorrow on the PM show, Jerry in the Hot Seat with Brian O'Driscoll as Ireland face Italy at the weekend, and Friday night racing as well. So there's a lot to look forward to. We'll see you tomorrow. Good luck. Give my ball and he out of grass. He'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give my ball and he out of space. He'll give you a move with godly grace. Ra-ta-ta.